Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking Canadians? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron, and this is my podcast. Welcome to it. How's it going by you? What's happening? Is it hot? Is it fucking hot? How hot is it where you are? Is it raining? Is it blowing apocalyptic wind? Are buildings falling down? How's the summer going? Where are you at right now? Are you cooking? Are you driving? Are you on a bike? Are you on a treadmill? I think it might be time to get off the treadmill and actually start running. Go for it. Run! Run! Look, you guys, how's everything going? I don't know how you're doing. I'm okay. I'm in Vancouver. I'm sitting here looking out a window over the city of Vancouver. It seems very peaceful. The weather's been beautiful. I've been, cooking all day for the week. I'm trying to get the shit done. Trying to have a life outside my head. Do you understand? Do you understand what it's like when you live in your head? The acting's helping. It's kind of interesting, though. I do have these moments. Like today we were on set for all day inside a soundstage where they have a deconstructed RV, which is the RV, the exact RV that we're using to drive across country in this show, but it's just in the middle of a soundstage, and you can pull pieces out of it. You can move walls. You have complete access, and you can shoot without the elements. And it's kind of fascinating sometimes when you're walking into a big black soundstage, dark, and you kind of walk around, and then you just enter this other world. And I don't know what it is to, you know, either you can do it or you can't. Either you can sit in a RV that's missing a side, or surrounded by cameras, or sitting on an apple box instead of a chair to be an eyeline for someone else, and completely believe you're in the RV, not even think about it. I think that should be probably the first lesson of acting school, to see if you can do that. Can you pretend that you're not where you're doing whatever acting you're doing? In the sense of, like, it's not a real situation. Can you pretend that it is? There you go. That's the first semester. What's going on? I was working with Owen today, Owen Wilson. It was funny because I've watched, like, since I'm up here, I'm watching or rewatching a lot of films. And I've watched two with Owen. So it's kind of interesting to kind of, casually bring up, like, yeah, so Inherent Vice, how was that for you? I rewatched Inherent Vice. Wait, I'm not going to start rambling about that. Let me talk about, I will, but not right now. I want to talk about my guest today. This guy is kind of an amazing guy. His name's Clarence Macklin. He's one of the leads in this new film, Sing Sing, with Coleman Domingo. But he wasn't a professional actor before this. The acting he did before this movie was in prison. And the movie is based on the real life story of Clarence and other incarcerated men at Sing Sing Prison in New York. And I had no idea, the depth of this guy in this program. I was kind of aware of the organization Rehabilitation Through the Arts because that's where my producer, Brendan's wife works, Dawn. And I watched the movie Sing Sing. Like, I knew she worked in the prisons with these guys doing theater, but I didn't know the effect of it or the organization of it. So I watched the movie, and then I also watched a documentary about RTA called Dramatic Escape, which was filmed leading up to Clarence's release from prison. But this guy was awesome. And I watched the movie not really knowing the backstory. Like, I didn't watch the documentary first. I watched the movie with Coleman Domingo, and there are scenes in the prison yard. There are scenes with him and Coleman where he shows up and I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? I never seen this guy before. He's nailing this shit. I mean, he is raw as fuck. He's like real deal. And then I find out, yeah, he is the real deal. But it's a fascinating thing because of the success rate of it. That if you engage these guys in this process, there's so much that can be, you know, it has a profound effect on their humanity, their focus, their time in prison, their understanding of empathy, their, you know, it just, it's really a kind of a moving thing that makes you believe that rehabilitation is possible and real if these people are given an opportunity to engage in a way that allows them to be vulnerable in a safe space and also reflect through art on their own lives and perhaps what they've done. I also saw some Instagram reel about this program that puts, you know, cats in prisons, like cats that would generally be in a shelter. And it makes total sense. A cat's like a perfect prison animal. Because you really have to earn the relationship, and the kind of relationship you have is not as demanding as a dog. And you don't necessarily, you know, ever feel completely in the pocket all the time with a cat, which I imagine is kind of how they might feel in reality. But it's these small things, these small efforts, when people give a shit about what's going on in the prison population to sort of bring some humanity in there or try to engage in some vulnerable humanity for these people in prison, that I think it seems can facilitate real change. So that was a very interesting conversation to have with Clarence. I'll be in Tucson, Arizona at the Rialto Theater on Friday, September 20th. I got the note. 20th, not 30th. I know I've been saying 30th. I'm in Phoenix at the Orpheum Theater on Saturday, September 21st. That's the day after. You can go to WTFpod.com for tickets. Also, if you're in the LA area this weekend, you can check out our recent guest, Alejandro Escovedo, who is performing live at the Venice West tomorrow, July 12th, and at the Lodge Room in Highland Park on Saturday, July 13th. You can get tickets at AlejandroEscovedo.com. He's the real deal. It's worth seeing. He asked me if I was going to be in town and if I wanted to play a song with him. I was like, fuck, I'm not going to be there. And then he was like, I told him I was in Vancouver. So then he's like, well, I'll be up in Vancouver. When did he say he was coming up here? On July 28th. And he's like, you want to play with me there? And I'm like, yeah. Yes, I'd like to play some rock and roll with Alejandro Escovedo, please. Thank you. And I was like, what do you want to do? You want to do maybe a VU or some Iggy or some Stones? And then he suggested Hurricane by Neil Young and Beast of Burden by the Stones. Now I got to learn those and not panic. Yeah, so I've been watching these. I'm going to be honest with you because I just realized it. You know, as much as I've talked about the movie Michael Clayton, which is a lot, I love it. That's a rewatch, a lot. But I've also found there's a new one in the fold. There's a new rewatch in the fold. I found myself, I think I've watched the movie Sicario probably 3 or 4 times in the last 6 months. And I just watched it again yesterday. And then I watched the very end again today. It is a beautifully structured movie, beautifully acted, very compelling. I just fucking love that movie. And it's one of those movies. It's a grown-up fucking movie. It's deeper than it comes off to be. It unfolds. The plot is spectacular. Man, what a great movie. So that's I'm finding that I'm rewatching that. And on the other side of the spectrum, the other thing that I rewatch, and some of you know this, and I can't explain it, but I just paid to watch The Devil Wears Prada again. So what does that mean? What does it mean that the two movies that I'm rewatching and that I have rewatched many times in my life outside of Michael Clayton are Sicario and The Devil Wears Prada? I think that gives me a lot of range. I think that I got a pretty broad personality, I guess. Or maybe I need to really take a look inside to see what's going on. turn down the dopamine volumes. Let's fucking turn it down a little bit. Stop putting nicotine in your goddamn mouth every 5 minutes. Let's take a break. Kind of breathe. What is it? What lives between Sicario and the Devil Wears Prada? Mark, who are you in there? Mark, what's happening? I did just watch Inherent Vice again. It was very helpful. I've watched a couple of movies, but Inherent Vice, it's based on a Thomas Pynchon book, a later Thomas Pynchon book. It is a very hippie kind of conspiracy, kind of lyrical, satirical examination of the cultural mindset of that turning point in the 70s, early 70s, of takes place in California. But I realized watching it this time that it's really taken directly from the book. And people don't talk like that. But it's a great book. And because I'm working on a screenplay with Sam Lipsight based on the book that he wrote, you know, we're kind of coming into these same sort of questions about what can actors deliver? What can they sell story-wise? What can they sell dialogue-wise? It's also a very convoluted, very funny Paul Thomas Anderson movie. Underrated. I will say that now. If only I could have the same experience with Big Lebowski after watching that fucking 20 times, that the second viewing of Inherent Vice, I'm like, God damn, this might be one of the best weirdo noir movies and also representation of that late 60s, early 70s kind of crashing of the hippie wave mindset that was kind of taking over the country and the cultural point of view. It's kind of amazing. Josh Brolin's amazing. You know, Joaquin is great. But Owen is in it. Owen Wilson. He plays a very kind of important role. He is what has to be saved at the end of the movie. His character. And I was talking to him, and I don't think he didn't seem to, I don't know if anyone can have a full grasp of that story, but he was perfect for the role. It's kind of funny and amazing that, and I rewatched Royal Tenenbaums recently, and he's great in that. And it's interesting that I can go to work and just kind of like not only act with this dude, but kind of bring up these moments where I'm like, yeah, I watched that Inherent Vice. I thought you were great in it. And then he'll tell me a story about the movie, which is, it's fun, man. It's fun. He's a good guy. I can't share the stories because there is stories, but I can tell you it's a good time. Look, okay. So I cooked chickpeas and kale for the week. I'm doing okay, people. I'm doing the thinking. I'm starting to realize that a lot of times I can't understand why people don't think the things that I think are bad and think the things that I think are good. I can't understand why they don't think the same as me. And I know that that's selfish and self-centered and weird, but there are moments where I'm like, I don't understand why something's popular. And somehow or another, my brain equates that with like, well, it can't be that popular. I mean, if I don't like it, but I barely like it. You know, it's just a strange thing to kind of reel in those tendrils of self-centeredness to the point where you're like, hey man, everyone likes different things. I don't have to understand why they like it. And maybe I should try to see why they like it. And that's what I do. But there is an innate kind of reflex, like, who's watching that? Oh, millions of people. Oh, well, then they must be wrong. It's the wrong voice to honor, kind of, isn't it? I don't know. Look, Clarence Macklin is kind of an amazing and inspiring success story. The movie he's in is called Sing Sing, and it opens in theaters tomorrow, July 12th. And this is the conversation we had back at the house.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
It's exciting, man. It's good to meet you.
Good to meet you as well, man.
I'll just start off by saying I love the movie, but your performance was pretty fucking great.
Thank you so much.
Like, I'm watching that movie, and, you know, I know the other guy, the lead. You know, I've seen
Coleman.
Him. Yeah,
Coleman, great guy.
Yeah, seems like a good guy. I'm watching it, and I've seen him in things. And then you come on, I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? Where'd this guy come from? Is he like a regular actor? Where the fuck did he come from? I've never seen this guy before. There's that scene where, you know, before you lock in and he's being too familiar, you know, and you just shut him down with that look in your eye. I'm like, this guy's got to be real. That doesn't seem like acting to me.
Yeah, well, there are some elements of me in there.
Yeah, of course.
There are some.
But the thing is, like, I watched the movie, and then I watched the documentary, the...
Dramatic Escape?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, so I get the full range of what the RTA...
Program, right.
Is about.
Mm-hmm.
And through the two of them, you know, after watching the documentary and then watching, you know, the movie... And also doing some acting myself.
Yeah.
I think what it does is that, you know, it really shows how important, you know, almost any art is.
Right. It's art is encompassing of all forms.
Yeah.
You know. It's,
yeah. And just the idea that we need it to make us more human.
Yes.
So, like, it kind of blew my mind in terms of, you know, how... When you're in prison and, you know, people get out and a lot of people don't stay out, but with this program, a lot of people do.
Yeah.
Because they learn something, you know, deeply valuable.
Yes.
So, and like, just in terms of when you think about acting or you think about writing or you think about, you know, you kind of know in your head, it's important, it's good people are doing that. But when you see guys who, you know, who have got nothing but time to process the depth of the thing,
yes,
that it can really change your whole fucking brain.
Right. It does.
Yeah.
It does because it draws something out of you.
Right.
Something that's already in there.
Yeah.
It's already in all of us.
Yeah.
Art is a tool to draw that thing out.
Yeah. The humanity.
Right. Exactly.
Because it's not an experiment, but when you got guys in there, you know, just sitting every day with their shame, or with their anger.
Right.
And not being able to unlock.
With those different layers of trauma.
Yeah, yeah,
that they
yeah.
never get to process from years and years ago.
Yeah.
Art gives you the permission, the blueprint to peel those layers back.
Yeah.
And deal with those.
Right. And also just to experience different lives.
Right.
In the character, right?
Right. No, you're not the only one that has been through this.
Yeah. And some of those, I think, you did Oedipus, right?
Yeah, I did Oedipus. Oedipus Rex was one of my favorite roles.
Yeah. And that's it, you know, that's not like, it's not everybody that has that experience.
Right.
But there's, but the depth of it, because of the way it's written, shows the humanity.
Right, and it boils down to choices and facing trauma rather than running away from it. This is what Oedipus really is about.
Yeah.
Because he ran away from a prediction that was predicted to happen.
Yeah.
So he ran from where he thought it was going to happen and ran right to the same thing he was running from. He ran right into it.
Yeah.
So had you stood your ground.
Yeah.
Had you stood where you were
in
life, in your position, in your convictions, stand on it.
Yeah.
Rather than run.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Or just do the opposite. Yeah, because, you know, there's so many times, because I think about, the things that hold us back, just as people, whatever it is. There's a whole spectrum of them. But there's sometimes, there's something in you that's going to fuck you from the inside.
Yeah, more times than not.
Yeah, right. And even when you know it's there, you know, you're like, it's doing it again. Like, you don't have any power over it.
Right, right.
That was the good thing about that character you played in the movie. You know, because he knew, and I imagine, you know, as you did, that, you know, there was some part of you that was wired in deep. Yeah. And it wasn't correct, right?
Right, right. It wasn't right. Something is wrong.
Yeah.
And it basically comes from the way you perceive your world around you.
Well, what was your story? How did you come into it? Because, you know, I know, you know, my producer, my business partner on this, Brendan McDonald, he's Dawn's husband.
Yeah. And great guy, too.
Great guy.
Yeah.
Smart guy.
Yeah.
But Dawn has been doing this for years. Working with the...
Rehabilitation through the arts program.
Yeah. And you guys did some work together?
Yeah, me and Dawn, we also did communication through art program on Rikers Island.
Yeah.
Through RTA,
yeah,
of course. And we got to affect some lives there.
Yeah.
You know?
What was that one?
That was about, you know, we took famous portraits from MoMA.
Yeah.
And handed it to individuals who were in our groups.
Yeah.
With no background, no history, anything about these portraits, and asked them to create a story around what they see.
Really?
Really. And some of the stories that they created, it like reflected where they were in life and how they process.
Uh-huh.
So once we got really, what made you make those choices? What caused you to? And then we get into their background history and their life, and we see what led to these choices that they made. You know, and we try to it's another way of peeling back the layers of trauma.
Right.
The unfortunate part is that we didn't have a long time with the guys.
Yeah.
And that's usually the case. Like, we just become... Even though we know that this is necessary, we know that it's needed, we never get enough time to really, and I learned that with the kids too that I work with.
You work with kids?
I work with at-risk teens.
What defines an at-risk teen?
Well, usually environment, situations, and, you know, growing up conditions and financial ability to get to where you need to be in life.
Yeah.
And if most of the kids we deal with are underdeveloped and underprivileged neighborhoods, you know, that don't really get to utilize a lot of the benefits of normal society.
Yeah,
They don't get that. It don't trickle down that far.
Yeah.
So we come in and we offer. I work with outreach teams from Harlem, from inner cities in New York and Westchester County, up in Westchester.
Yeah.
Two particular programs. One is Successful Steps.
Yeah.
And another one is 914 United.
And I have to imagine that, you know, from your own experience and then coming out of your experience and having this wisdom about it, or having, you know, at least been able to allow yourself to be open enough to show hope, right?
Yeah.
That you must see pretty dramatic change pretty regularly.
I do.
Yeah.
But I'm really not enough. We need more.
Yeah.
I'm really not enough.
You can't do it all yourself?
I can't do it all. I'm sorry.
We're all counting on you.
Like, when I was working in Lincoln Hall, with the at-risk teens, and a lot of these kids that I work with, they go back upstate when they're done with the treatment or they're done with their programming.
Yeah.
And I can't continue the, we need other people to get involved in the neighborhood where they come from.
Yeah.
You know, so when you send them to us and we only have this limited amount of time, they get the benefits of everything we have to offer.
Yeah.
But it's only for a short period of time.
Yeah.
And once they go back, they go right back into the same environments.
Yeah. Because then there's the pressure.
Yeah, now
peer pressure, survival,
different elements. They got to eat. They got to do what they got to do.
So when you got into the program, RTA, was it already existing?
Yes, it was. It was already existing.
So when did you first start?
I came in probably like 2000, maybe, I think.
And how long had you been in prison at that time?
I came to prison in 1996.
96. What changed? How'd you get, I know I saw the movie and it's kind of about you, no?
Yeah, it's a little bit about me.
Yeah. So you were just curious?
Actually, what really got me into the program, I had came to the chapel because they closed the yard and I had to make a deal with somebody that was on the other side of the jail. So the only place we could do it was someplace where both sides of the jail meet. So yeah. we arranged to go to the chapel.
Yeah, a good place for deals.
Yes, at the moment. It was a good place for deals. So when I get down here,
yeah,
and they're putting on this play, I believe it was One Flew Over the Cuckoo's
yeah.
Nest.
I
believe that was the first one.
That's a good one.
And I'm noticing that a lot of these faces are guys that I see in population. I was under the impression that everyone on stage was somebody that came in
from the
outside.
To do the show. Right.
And how I view things like that, I was, you know, because I'm not justifying what I do.
Yeah.
I view things like that, like a lot of these people just come in here and look at us like we're a tax write-off.
Yeah.
Like something to make you sleep better at night. You came to help the poor prisoners.
Yeah.
You know? So I wasn't really too invested in that.
Those fuckers.
So I wasn't really too invested in that.
Yeah.
But once I seen that these guys was up here and they're mingling with the civilians, you got women up there and everything. I'm in prison all the time. I wouldn't mind being around some women. You know what I'm saying? And I had to take a year without getting any infractions in order to get in the program.
Yeah.
In order to get in, you have to have a clean, no Tier 3 tickets or anything.
What's a Tier 3 ticket?
Tier 3 is a serious infraction.
Did you have some?
I had a lot.
Yeah.
I had a lot of them. At the time, I was in trouble a lot.
In prison.
Yeah. Yeah. It continues. You know, the behavior continues.
Well, that was interesting, at least in the documentary, the one guy was talking about how, you know, whatever goes on outside is going to go on inside.
Yeah.
If you're that guy, you're that guy in
there. That's a fact. In prison is a microcosm of the macro.
Yeah.
It's just more condensed.
Yeah. Yeah, and there was a couple of moments in the movie when the big guy was talking about...
Dino.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he's talking about, you know, sitting there eating lunch, and that guy gets his throat cut in front of him, and they all just sit there.
Yeah.
And that, you know,
with
that
blood squirting on you and everything, just wipe it all, get it back. Yeah, you can't like, and act like you ain't seen nothing.
Right. We've been taught to believe, or that because of the nature of where we are, this is normal.
Right.
That this just happened. It's fucking crazy.
It's crazy, man.
So what got you in there?
What got me into the program?
Into prison.
What got me into prison?
Yeah.
Robbery.
Yeah. Your whole life?
My whole life is violent.
Yeah. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Mount Vernon, New York.
Yeah. And what was the situation?
Well, I had a single parent mother.
Yeah.
And
she's still around?
Yeah, my mom. She came to South by Southwest with me. Yeah, she had a great time. Everybody treated her good. She met Coleman. She loved everybody. Everybody loved my mom.
I can't imagine what it must feel like for her.
Well, for me, it felt like this is like one of the first times I ever got to see my mother cry for something good that I did.
Yeah.
You know, normally when she cries for me, it's something bad that I did. You know?
Yeah.
And that made me reflect back to like, I used to be in prison and sitting on my bunk wishing I could change that.
Yeah.
Because I used to envision my mother going into the building. I grew up in the project, so you know how nosy everybody is in the project.
Yeah.
I envisioned my mother walking into the building and people pointing at her saying, yeah, that's his mother right there.
Yeah, yeah. The bad guy.
Yeah, that's the bad guy's mom. Right
yeah.
And that made me feel so bad, man.
A whole life of that.
Yeah. Made me feel so bad. So to see my mom cry for something good for me.
And he did such a good job, man. So when you were growing up, you didn't feel like, because I have no real knowledge. I just had a comedian on, you know, Ali Sadiq.
I heard of him.
He's good, man. He was in prison for about 6 or 7 years, and his whole act is a series of hour shows about, you know, his life before, in prison, and you know where he's at now, and he's just telling these stories. It's really kind of amazing. But you know, coming from where I'm coming from, the representation of prison that I understand is only going to come through movies.
Yeah.
And through, you know, hearing things and, you know, hearing politics, you know, lefty guy, but you know, the progressive ideas of this and that.
Yeah.
But when you see it for real in the documentary and then in the movie, because it seems like the movie went out of its way to be very specific and not, you know, have a, you know, they wanted to be honest.
Right, right.
And those guys seem to work on that. But I mean, but what everybody talks about is that, you know, when you grow up a certain way, your choices are very limited.
Yeah.
And that's what you experience.
Yeah, limited choices and negative influences.
Right. That's what Ali talks about in the special, that, you know, the only reason he got into crime was because the guy who was doing the crime on the corner had a nice sweatsuit on. And he's like, I'll get that sweatsuit.
And it could be just that simple. It could be something just that simple that...
And then
that,
you're in.
And you're in. Now.
Yeah.
But, for me, what got me into it was I fought a lot when I was younger. When I was younger, I fought a lot, and I fought a lot because of my younger brothers.
Yeah.
Because we was the poor kids on the block. We didn't have much. And, you know, we used, you know how in our day they used to call it cracking, when they crack on you about the things you got. Now, I'm good with you cracking. I can laugh with you.
Yeah.
But if you make my little brother cry, it's going to be a problem. It's going to be a problem if my brother start crying.
And this is when you're, what, like 11 or 12?
Maybe 11, 12.
Yeah.
Now, as I got older, I'm known as a fighter now. Now... I'm fighting dudes and I'm taking your stuff now.
Yeah.
If you talk about my brother's sneakers, I'm going to take yours and give them to him. This is what's going to happen after the fight.
You're Robin Hood.
And in my mind, I was justified.
Sure. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
In my mind, I'm completely 100% in the right.
Yeah, you learned your lesson. Now you don't have any sneakers. How many brothers do you have?
I got two younger brothers.
They still good?
Yeah, they're still good. One lives down south with my mom, and the other lives in New York. He lives in Harlem.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And did they come to see the movie?
Nah, they didn't get a chance. They work a lot.
Yeah? You know? Maybe they'll get there.
But they're going to get there to see it. They're going to get there.
Yeah. So it goes from, you know, defending your brother to what?
Defending my brother. Like I said, I started taking these sneakers and stuff like that. Just turned into Schmeez just robbing people.
Yeah.
Me going to take what I want.
Yeah, I mean, in the doc, you said that you didn't. You were pretty specific about who you robbed.
Yeah, this is me justifying robbery again. This is me saying that I'm right
because
I only want to rob drug dealers. That's it. I'm not robbing a working person. I'm not sticking up the store. I'm not doing that.
Yeah, this is bad money all around.
I'm saying my justification was like, if you out in these streets and you doing this dirt right here, you need to know it's a wolf out here.
Yeah,
you gonna feed the wolf. Or pay the wolf. What
right.
What you gonna do?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't just come out here and pick gold off the streets and go home. Bro.
Yeah.
That's not what's going on.
Yeah. You're in that business. I'm in the business of taking your business.
Yeah. Right. So me justifying it again, you know?
Yeah, but there's that code that I think is hard for, you know, people who have not experienced to understand that there is a code to the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, how do you not get killed robbing drug dealers?
Because you got to be tough. You got to be tough. The drug dealer ain't the one you got to worry about. It's the guy he pays to be the shooter.
Yeah. Oh, right, right. And that can happen easy.
That can happen easy.
Are you amazed that you didn't get shot?
Amazed that I'm still here. Amazed that I made it this far. Because there's been situations where I've been caught with no gun. And I had to bluff my way out of that.
Well, there you go. That was your first performance.
Yeah.
Boy, I think that was in the movie, too, that like I noticed that, you know, in how you were able to access. Because it turns out, I mean, you're not a killer.
Nah.
But there's that moment where, you know, where you stand off to him for the first time to set those boundaries. And I'm like, this guy's a killer. You know what I mean? Because you got that look in your eye, like that dead look.
Yeah.
But you had to know how to do that.
But see, I drew from a lot of the experiences that I've seen.
Yeah.
I've been around for a long time. I know a lot of things. I know the behavior. I know the mannerisms.
From before jail.
Before jail and jail, in prison. I know the behaviors and mannerisms because I've witnessed a lot. So I drew from that and my own experiences, you know?
Yeah. So like when you, in terms of that, in terms of having that hyper-vigilant perception, so you can pretty much clock a guy who's bad news pretty quick.
Yes.
Yeah. Like you know a killer when you see one.
Yeah, wolves know wolves. It's a reason why tuna fish don't swim with sharks.
Yeah, yeah.
They both predators.
But they do have to share the ocean.
Yeah, they got to share the ocean. You know, that means you know when to leave.
But it's interesting because there's like a spectrum of wolf. But I guess part of the whole, in terms of like getting, evolving as an actor anyways, but just at a survival, you've got to convince the really bad wolf
that you're just as bad. And you belong.
Yeah. And then there's an understanding sometimes.
Listen, nobody wants to go where it's going to be a difficult meal, not even a real wolf. You know, they'd rather take an easy meal.
Yeah.
Opposed to another wolf. You want to just run up on something that'll eat you too.
Right.
Has the capability of eating you too.
So there's an understanding. Yeah. Like, you know, you go eat over there.
There's a bunch of sheep over there. Why come over here messing with another wolf?
So how long was it, were you robbing?
Robbing, like, as far as in the streets?
Yeah.
Well, it was a pretty long time, the 80s, probably from the mid-80s.
Yeah. How old were you when you got busted?
On this run?
Yeah.
29 years old. Oh. I came home 47.
Oh, my God. You said one of the, in that documentary, where you got out.
Yeah.
And it was a great moment, you know, because you're just looking around and the filmmaker goes, what are you going to do now?
Get something to eat.
Well, of course, boy, man. After I saw that prison food, and you were your peanut butter and jelly, you were ready to eat.
Yeah,
what'd you eat?
Well, we went to someplace on 14th Street, right by the Saboteur film.
Yeah,
because Nick and Dave are the guys
who did
the documentary. Yeah, so we went right around there in the meatpacking district, and I had a really nice steak, bro.
Yeah.
Oh man, best steak ever.
They didn't film that.
I don't know. They may have that somewhere. I think Nick and Dave may have that because we filmed everything.
So the other thing that when I talked to Ali also was about, like, the, you know, the humanity of getting into prison, because when you only see it from movies and TV shows, you just assume that, you know, right away it's going to be like obviously it's a fucking nightmare on one level, but there's a full spectrum of people in there.
Right. It's not like that every day, all day long. I don't even get into prison movies because I can't see me in them.
Yeah.
I was in prison and never watched prison movies.
Never.
Because I don't see me in them.
But when you went in, I guess there, on some level, there's an understanding that there was a good chance it was going to happen.
Yeah.
And you know that.
But you made that choice when you picked up the gun the first time.
Yeah.
You knew that. You knew that this could happen. You was playing games.
Yeah. And what happens when, you know, you get in there for that 4 years before you find this program? I mean, what was the adjustment? Like, when you get in there, you know in your head that you got to stay a wolf. Yeah,
got to.
Yeah.
And that's the adjustment.
Yeah.
Life don't change. Just the story don't stop because baby
just
boy
more
got
wolves
popped
in there.
Yeah.
They're all in there.
And it's a lot more sheep, too.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. Is that true?
Yeah.
So you just figure out the dynamic?
Yeah.
So when you got in there, were you, because he was talking about, you know, he had this thing where he said you go under the blanket. Where, like, you know, well, it's not, I don't think that's a term, but he said the guys that get in there, it takes them a little while to know that they're in there. Right. And that they got to, you know, they got to process it, and then they got to be like, all right, so now what?
Yeah.
Is that the same experience?
Not for me. I mean, I went through that knowing I went through trial. I went to trial. So during trial, I started.
What is that?
When you go to, before you get sentenced, you go to trial.
Yeah.
Go to like John Gotti went to trial first.
Oh, okay.
Like, you go to trial with a court, judge, jury.
Oh, trial. Yeah.
So I did that first. And during that part, I realized that this was the reality of my situation.
Yeah. And what, you had public defender, or how'd you go?
Pretty much public defender, yep.
And you had to do a deal?
No, I didn't do no deals. Y'all got to get this to me.
Yeah.
I didn't do this, but y'all got to give it to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when you get in there, I mean... Is there somebody, do you look for allies immediately, or do you just try to establish yourself?
I mean, there is no real blueprint that this one could give you. There's no book. There's no way to navigate how, that without actually going through it.
No how-to? Day
afraid,
one.
No, afraid not.
Well, what was your experience?
My experience was when I first got to the jail, when I got my bedroll in a state shop and on my way to the cell that I was assigned, there was a trail of blood in the hallway that nobody cleaned up.
On purpose?
This is because the incident's fresh.
Oh, right.
It just happened.
Yeah.
They got to get together to get the blood splatter crew and all that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's a whole thing. Everybody can't just clean blood.
Yeah.
You need a blood splatter crew.
Yeah.
That does that.
So. Yeah. And is that a prisoner job?
That's a prisoner's job, yeah. That's a prisoner's job. But they're trained and know.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway.
So that's your welcome.
That's the welcome.
Yeah.
Now I walk, as soon as we're following the trail of blood, we get into the block, open these big gates, and it's tears on top of tears. Noise everywhere. Everybody moving around.
Sing, sing?
Sing, sing, yeah. Everybody moving around. Like, there's no, like, I'm thinking there was some type of police control.
Yeah.
Got the guys in their cells or something.
Yeah, yeah.
No such thing. Everybody's moving everywhere.
Yeah.
The blood's still on the ground. The blood leads to the cell that I'm going in.
So you're thinking, like, this is not a lucky cell.
This is where it happened at. I guess, you know, this can't be good luck, right?
No way.
But then I got to wait for them to clean it out and all that. Then I got to go in and clean it out myself.
Yeah, and set up.
And set my thing up. And and while I'm listening to everything on the gate, all the noise, all the confusion.
Oh,
and it stinks like hell in here.
And so what locks into your head is just to maintain your composure and to, like, you know, hold your ground immediately.
What locked into my head is just survival. Just any time else.
Yeah.
Anywhere else.
Yeah.
Survival. And I'm going to deal with every situation as they come.
Yeah. And that's what you did?
That's what I did.
And you got to figure out a hustle for yourself?
Yeah, I had to figure out. First thing I had to do was stop smoking cigarettes.
Ugh. Hard, right?
Cigarettes is money.
Yeah.
The more you smoke, the more you lose.
So you haven't smoked since?
Nah, I haven't smoked since.
I love the nicotine, man.
Yeah, I had to stop that because once you open the pack, it's no longer money.
Yeah. Oh, really?
It's a dead pack now. You might as well smoke all 20 of those.
You can't sell singles?
Can't sell them.
No?
Nah, not in there. They're not selling singles. They sell roll-ups, but that take the money too long.
Yeah. So how do you make money in there?
Oh, man. Sing Sing?
Yeah.
Is anything you want in New York, you could have got it in Sing Sing at the time I was there.
Yeah?
Anything you wanted in New York, you could have got it in Sing Sing. When I first got there, it was crazy.
Really?
Yeah.
So people just bringing stuff in, and then there's an understanding. How do you get stuff in? Everybody's getting paid off.
I'm not here to reveal all the secrets of individuals that may be still making a living off this thing here.
Yeah. But you're just saying that the business was the business.
The business was the business, just like out here, man. Same thing, man. Same rules apply.
So when you come upon that scene in the chapel, what was your state of mind like?
Well, my mindset when I seen this was that it turned something on in me.
Yeah.
Because, like, when I was younger, I never was into sports. I was more into art.
Yeah.
I was more into art.
Really?
I like to draw.
Yeah.
I like to paint.
Yeah.
I like things like that.
Where'd you learn how to do that when you were a kid?
This was natural. I like to read comic books.
Oh, yeah.
I love comic books, and I began drawing the characters out of the comics.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when I found out this calms me.
Yeah.
This right here puts me in touch with something different.
Yeah.
You know, and when I seen the guys putting on a play, it activated that in me.
Yeah.
It took me back to that.
Yeah.
The art part of me.
But, like, in your mind, you didn't think you were getting out?
I didn't know. For sure. I had 20 years sentence.
Yeah.
Tomorrow is not promised in prison at all. 20 years definitely is not promised in prison. So I don't got no backup, bend over, or bow down in me. So
you're just going to stay, furious.
Right.
Yeah.
Until I found the art.
But when you were in that zone, did you experience, because it seemed like there's a moment there in the character in the movie, too, that you play. And I imagine in most guys who have to maintain a front to just survive,
right,
that vulnerability is a liability.
It is. Empathy is a liability, you know?
Yeah. So,
if you are perceived in the wrong light, it could be detrimental.
On a lot of levels.
Right.
Did you feel yourself, though, when you were younger, when you're on the streets, did you have those things?
I knew what they were. I knew what empathy was, but I didn't know the word for it.
Right. You had the feelings, though?
I had the feelings.
Yeah.
And I couldn't explain it, couldn't express it. But I remember times when, like, let me explain. One time, I was in a car with my mom. I was much younger, and we was driving along.
Yeah.
And she hit a raccoon.
Oh, yeah.
And she looked over in the seat. After she hit the raccoon, we drive still. She looked over in the seat and said, "What are you crying for?"
Yeah. Yeah, it's terrible.
It was terrible for me.
Yeah.
I was like, I got hit by the car.
I can't take it.
The raccoon did nothing. He just crossed the street and got hit.
On the phone, I get all these, you know, these cat rescue.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, my God. Because they're so innocent, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah,
now,
somehow.
A guy that could fight anybody.
Yeah.
To hurt an animal, man, that's innocent, then nothing, man. It tears me up.
Yeah, me too.
It'll tear me up.
That you feel worse for them than you do for people.
Right. Because people made choices.
Yeah, people got it coming. Raccoon's just trying to get across the street.
Yeah.
So how's it go? So you see Cuckoo's Nest, you see the women, and then you're like, how do I get in?
Yeah, that's pretty much how it went.
Yeah. And who'd you talk to? Who was in charge?
Well, it might have been Devon G, the first person I spoke to about getting into the
program.
He's
in the movie.
Yeah, Devon G, he's represented by Coleman Domingo.
That's who he's playing?
Yes.
And what was his role at that time? How long had it been around?
At that time, he was the man in RTA. He's the guy that was writing plays, directing plays, acting in plays.
Yeah.
He's the go-to guy.
Yeah. Is he still in there?
No, he's out with us.
Oh, he is?
He's been to Southwest with us. He's been to everywhere. And he's got a cameo in the film.
Which one is he?
He's the guy that got his book signed by Coleman Domingo.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
So
he actually wrote that book.
Yeah.
He wrote 12 or 13 books while he was in prison.
Yeah.
Most of them are published now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
He's doing all right?
He's doing all right.
So when you talked to him, was it similar to what happened in the film?
Actually, it was. Actually, I believe it was him that approached me.
Yeah.
But he didn't know how I already had the feeling that I wanted to be in this thing.
Oh, because he saw you do it in the movie. He sees you running around doing your hustles. And
yeah. And one part about the movie that's not as accurate as it would be, me and Devon G already were friends.
Oh, okay.
We already knew one another.
Yeah.
We already had a healthy, struggling competition with each other that was kind of like a healthy thing. It wasn't a competition that was detrimental or violent, anything like that. It's just that brought out the best in both of us, I think.
So what happens is you get in there, and then you got to start doing the exercises and start reading this stuff.
Yeah.
So how hard was it to let go in order to do that?
Well, for me, I believe coming into RTA, I always took a protective stance about the individuals that was in there and the program itself, because a lot of the brothers that was in RTA were, not as strong as I was as far as, like, being able to hold yourself in the yard and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Everybody's not wolf material.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Sure.
But I always take a protective stance over the, and I think that made me more empathetic and more sympathetic towards my brothers. And that put me in a position where I got on the steering committee and began to be a decision maker for the program, a part of the decision making process.
Yeah.
For the program, and that responsibility that they gave me showed me that they believed in me enough. And I think that jump started a certain belief that I had got in myself.
So by the time you got in there, you were okay with being vulnerable.
By the time I got it, I think that's something that gradually grew. I don't think it just turned on like that as soon as I got in there.
Because even as a performer myself, you know, that the feeling of, for some reason, being embarrassed is the worst fucking thing in the world.
Yeah, it is. Unless
it's
a purposeful, unless it's a purpose for it.
Yeah.
Like in acting on stage, I could trip, fall, make everybody laugh.
Yeah.
But it's a purpose of that trip and fall.
You did on purpose.
In this story.
Yeah.
To complete the story.
That's sure.
It has something to do with the whole story.
Right.
In that reasoning, that what you would consider being embarrassed wouldn't be an embarrassment.
Sure, because you do it on purpose.
Right,
you
right,
got
right.
control.
Right. But
right.
just purposely or unconsciously trip and fall and stumble and look crazy in the yard.
No good.
Not good. Not good.
The other wolves make note. We saw that guy. We saw him inside. We saw what he's made out of. Yeah, there's a guy, Harry Shearer, who's a comic, an actor. He said the reason comedians do comedy is so you can control why people laugh at you.
They're going to laugh anyway.
Right. But you might as well, you want it to be on purpose.
Right.
But I just thought there was that moment where somebody who has a certain posture is reading something or doing an audition and not knowing or having control or being skilled at it, that's got to make or break some guys.
Listen, there's been times where I was affected by the heckles from the crowd.
Yeah.
So much that I had to go holler at the dude that was doing the heckling.
Couldn't let go.
On another time in the yard somewhere. Listen, you got something you want to say to me or something?
Yeah.
You don't like something I said or something?
Another infraction.
Yeah, but you know, you got to let that stuff roll off your back.
But you got to learn how to do that.
Yeah, because you got to learn how to do that.
It's hard.
What made it a lot easier for me is realizing that a lot of times they're not laughing at me. It's something that they're missing.
Yeah.
It's something that they're covering up for with this laughter. This laughter is covering something else.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's
cool to poke your finger at me and
right,
point at me.
Yeah.
But it's something about you that made you have that response.
Yeah, and sometimes the laughter can mean a lot of things. It can be sadness. It's just a relief thing.
Right.
So when you get in there and you start to feel these feelings, what was the moment, like, what was the role where you realized that you could, you know, live through these bigger moral issues, you know, through a character? Mm-hmm. Where you actually connected and said, like, oh, I get this. I get how, you know, this introduces me to a way of thinking that I did not possess before.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, I got into that possibly with Oedipus. I think Oedipus did that for me. And Booster, when I did Booster for August Wilson's Jitney.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like stepping in some shoes that I'm very, very familiar with.
Yeah.
And the power of giving somebody else a more insightful guide to how to navigate themselves through certain situations that I possibly been through, studied before, or observed, and now I have a better insight on, to be able to give other people some type of navigation through that. I think that was the purpose of theater in the first place.
Yeah.
To connect people and show them that you're not the only one going through whatever you're going through.
Right. And some things are like, you know, these stories reveal, you know, the full range of the emotional experience, right? Or the immoral experience. So once you start doing it, how is it received, like, on the yard? I mean, like, do guys say, like, oh, shit, you did that good thing? Or do they
look? It's mixed emotions. I done had killers come to me with tears in their eyes talking about, listen, man, let me know when you're going to do some shit like that again. I'm supposed to be in here crying like this.
That's a private meeting, and now you got a secret.
That's when you realize the power of this thing.
So you were in that program. You were working within the program in some capacity for years.
I was part of the steering committee for years too.
Yeah.
Once you know, my commitment grew, my responsibilities expanded.
Yeah.
In the program. You know, I got on a steering committee, and you know, I'm a decision maker.
Yeah,
and my decisions are respected, and at least my opinion is valued.
And now you have some sort of sense of how theater works too.
Right, right.
And you could probably run a theater if you wanted to.
Possibly, yes, I probably could.
You know, because you guys, they do everything, right?
Yeah,
you
we do everything. We do
the build the sets, and you find guys who are going to do that. Mm-hmm. It's like real old school theater.
Yeah, yeah. We get the shop to build any set we like.
Yeah,
that gets everybody. That's what expands the people in RTA program because everybody doesn't want to be on stage.
Right.
However, they do want to contribute.
Right.
Everybody's not built for the spotlight. That's not what they want.
Yeah.
But they want to contribute.
Yeah, and there was something in the doc that, you know, some guys were like, I don't care what we do, I just want to be out of these clothes.
Get out of them greens.
Yeah.
For a little while. Put on some real clothes, man.
It's a big deal.
It's a huge deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got a lot coming in.
Yeah, man, I don't understand.
How long have you been out here?
In L.A.?
Yeah.
I got here yesterday.
Have you been out here before a lot?
Nah, never.
Never?
Never been out here before.
So how's it feel to be in show business?
Man, this is crazy.
Really?
I think the huge part of the excitement, everything is just to be received as well as I'm being received.
Yeah?
For the story to be received.
Yeah, and what kind of things are you doing? You meeting with big shots?
Well, I couldn't tell you if you're a big shot. This is a meeting. Yeah, I'm meeting with a lot of good people. I know that.
Yeah.
If people was to just rely on the stories that they hear about this industry or the people that's involved in the industry, I'm sure it wouldn't be.
Yeah.
They wouldn't see this picture that I'm seeing.
Yeah.
Because I haven't experienced any of that. I only experienced a lot of good people so far.
Well, you're in a great project. You know, it's one of those projects, you know, for whatever reason, there's very few people that can be like, "Yeah, fuck that movie." You know? Yeah. What kind of asshole? Yeah, this goddamn prisoner's doing a good thing. Who needs that shit? So you're probably avoiding those guys.
Yeah, I'm avoiding those guys.
But you're getting well-received as an actor.
Yes, I am.
When you got out, after you had the steak, mm-hmm. I guess you went home and you probably saw your brothers and your mom.
Everybody, yeah. Saw my family, everybody, yeah.
What were you thinking? Like, well, I'm going to do what?
Well, I knew I wanted to act at that moment.
Yeah.
It was still hot off the press at that time.
Yeah.
Just coming down off of Dramatic Escape.
Yeah, the doc.
So, yeah, my thing is I want to get in front of the camera. This is when the reality that, you know, bills got to get paid right now.
Right. Also, in that last production, were you actually in A Few Good Men?
Yes, I was. No, I was on the steering committee and I was involved. I was on my way home.
Right.
So I didn't take a role because we didn't know exactly.
But then you ended up having to stay there.
Then I wound up having to stay anyway.
That was an interesting little story thing point in the doc where you like they fucked up the paperwork.
Yeah.
But you know, I knew what I saw in that moment was like, you know, if you were a younger man and you hadn't had the experience you had, you might have fucked yourself.
Yeah.
Somehow.
I'd have went crazy in there, did some crazy shit, been
right?
Locked up again.
Right.
Yeah.
That was like that. That's a powerful moment because you knew, like, you know, you had. You actualized your full humanity, so you weren't going to let the thing that fucks you fuck you.
Right.
Right? This is a good moment.
Right. And how I seen it was like, it was at that time, it was a lot of guys, not only in RCA, but a lot of guys in the prison that looked up to me at this point. And I couldn't.
Oh. Yeah. You had to do the right thing for other people.
Yeah, had to do the right thing. there's also others that would be like, look, I told you. See?
Yeah.
I knew he was going to do that shit.
Now he's here for a long time. Yeah. We get more plays now. So you had responsibilities when he got out.
Yeah, yeah.
And so how did you integrate back into the world?
Well, basically just, you know, I stayed in contact with individuals that was like-minded and positive and on the track that I'm on. Like, we have RTA.
Who had gotten out?
The whole network.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah.
RTA, between RTA, Exodus, Hudson Link.
Yeah.
These are all programs that was in Sing Sing, and all of us like leaned on each other.
Yeah.
So there's a whole community of us out here.
Yeah.
And that's where I found a lot of times when I needed employment, I can go to various places over here. I can go to Exodus. I can go to Hudson Link or Rehabilitation Through the Arts, set up some type of, you know, where I go do some teaching or whatever, do a speaking engagement over here.
Yeah.
Just to help along the way with these financial woes that we all have.
Yeah. And it worked?
It worked. It kept me sane. It kept me in between jobs. I didn't have to worry too much because I had a network that was working with me. Even Brent Buell, even our volunteers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I could lean on them too.
Yeah.
At that time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because you knew them.
And they know me. And
right.
We had built these bonds and we trust one another.
And is that how you got hooked up with, you kept doing like the workshops and stuff?
Yeah, yeah. Kept doing, but see, I got a job through Exodus.
What's that?
In Harlem. Exodus is another program that helps brothers that come home from prison.
Yeah.
Help them find employment, help them get their resumes together.
Yeah.
Even if you need a suit of clothing to go and interview.
Yeah.
So I got hooked up with them and they sent me on a job interview to Lincoln Hall, Boys Haven.
Yeah.
And I got a job there and I stayed there for like 11 years.
So when you come out though, like you went in when you were 26, you come out and you're...
I went in 29, 47.
47. Mm-hmm. So like maybe I'm wrong, but I mean like no matter how you were feeling about yourself and your prospects when you got out, I would imagine that whatever the streets were, as you knew them, long
not
gone.
The same.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck on 42nd Street. What is this?
So there wasn't like, you didn't walk in, there wasn't a bunch of dudes going, he's back.
Nah.
Because you were young and they're all gone.
Nah, they're not all gone. They're just around. There was a few of them around.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What'd they say?
They didn't want to say much. They're hoping I took this route.
They do.
It's a good thing nobody wants or needs me in the street the way I used to be.
Yeah.
That's not good for nobody.
Yeah, especially you.
Me.
Yeah.
Especially me.
Yeah.
I don't want it either.
Yeah. So when you start doing this work, like, do you, are you, like, because now, like, it looks like to me, you know, that you might have a career as an actor.
Yeah.
And then
hopefully.
Yeah. But, you know, how does that play against, you know, the service work?
Well, I still do the service work. In fact, on Juneteenth, I'm going in Soho and do some readings with some kids in that area.
Yeah.
You know, I still work with 914 United. We go into different facilities and speak to the young men who are justice impacted, you know, facing some time, and, you know, because of choices they made.
Yeah.
So I try to get them. I'm a certified national gang trainer as well. I get individuals out of gangs.
Really? How do you get that training?
I got trained. I had to take a. It's a program that you have to take. You have to pay for it and get trained by, you know, Christian Claudio. He's a very good friend of mine. He's an ex-gang leader.
Yeah.
He's a King Smurf from the Latin Kings.
Yeah.
And he does non-police officer certificate, non-law enforcement certificate for guys like us who have a particular skill set. Like, we know these streets. We know this language. You know what I'm saying? Our name still means something on these streets.
Yeah.
So we come to help.
Are the gangs still as powerful as they used to be?
Not as much.
Yeah.
Nah, they're losing their grip.
Why is that?
I believe because I think the younger kids that's coming up behind them are a lot more intelligent than the ones that, you know, fell victim to this.
Yeah.
That's the only way it's going to go away. It's nothing that, the only way it's going to go away is they choose. They're going to have to choose to do
better.
They're
choosing their phones.
Yeah.
Out over the streets. It's one of the benefits of technology.
That's a fact.
So tell me a little bit about that process. How do you get a guy out of a gang?
Well, they had to want to leave. They got to want to leave.
And sometimes they can't.
Sometimes they can't. It's when they need intervention.
But they can't because they owe something or somebody else got something on them?
There's many reasons why. It's never one solid reason.
Yeah.
You know, never know what it is. But they may need intervention.
And when you intervene, though, I mean, it's not. There's no witness protection program.
No.
So they've got to sort of, you know, suck up whatever's going to come at them and hope for the best, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is.
Yeah.
But once you say you want to be out, you got to really, really want to be out. There's no going back and jumping the fence and straddling the fence.
Yeah.
You're on your own.
Yeah.
You do that, you're on your
own. And in general, is there that thing, like you just said before, about the guys that, you know, that you knew when you were younger? Do you find that a lot of times if somebody is able to get out, that the people that can't kind of respect it?
The people that can't get out?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. More times than not, because if they was to open the doors and let all of them out, they'll leave.
Yeah, yeah.
They'll leave the gang. If you allow them to leave, they'll leave.
Yeah. So the ones that do leave, it takes a certain amount of balls to do that.
Yeah.
And they've got to be like, all right.
You got to be serious. You got to be dedicated to getting out and living without a gang.
Yeah, but sometimes it's life-threatening, isn't it?
Yes, it is sometimes.
Oh, my God.
It's still your choices, though.
Yeah, yeah. But sometimes there's a choice of doing what you need to do for yourself to save your life, but sometimes that life is going to be looking over your shoulder for the rest.
Sometimes it may involve relocating.
Sometimes it may involve
that, because the reach of them are not as far and vast as you would believe.
Right.
They're not as connected as you would believe.
Right, right.
Like, so one region of the planet may not even know the other region of the planet exists.
Right, yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but that's another problem with the phone. That's right. Yeah, found them on Instagram.
Yeah, then you got to stay off Instagram. You might want to stay off of that. If your head is on a chopping block, you might want to not be on Instagram posting your location.
Yeah, don't be an influencer, an ex-gang influencer.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do you find is the rate of success with the kids usually?
It's not as much. It's not as high a rate as I would like. I mean, in my travels, I have got them out of gangs, and now they're in college.
Yeah.
There's things like that. There's individuals who have gotten out and went to the military.
Yeah.
There's just individuals who've gotten out and relocated. But what overshadows that is that the percentage of individuals that fall, that don't take advantage of opportunities presented to them because of whatever reason, peer pressure or whatever.
Yeah.
And then later on, I have to hear that that individual got killed.
Yeah.
Or that individual killed somebody, and now he's locked up.
Yeah.
And
that's hard, right?
It's hard, and it'd be sad, especially if you invest a lot of time into a young person.
Yeah.
And you see the growth and development and you see the potential, and then you got to send them right back out to the Sharks.
But you got to, I guess that's something else you learn from growing up the way you did and doing time, is that you get kind of calloused, you know, you can feel the feels, but then, you know, you got
to. But see, that's another thing that benefit from RTA program, the ability to decompress.
Yeah.
The ability to let your day wash off you.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because I can't go to sleep with this every night, wake up tomorrow morning with it on my mind again. I got to be able to decompress, and I got to be able to.
Put it into perspective.
Put everything in perspective, compartmentalize. All of these things I had to learn how to do in order to be effective in dealing with these kids.
Well, I guess that's something that, because I noticed that too in the way the guys were talking in the doc, that, you know, I imagine when you're doing time that having a resentment or a beef or a revenge plan, that's your brain just has something to do.
Yeah, but there's a lot more to do.
That's what I mean. So that if you're memorizing lines.
Yeah.
And that becomes... Yeah,
that
because,
takes the place of
right.
focusing on negative energy.
Like right.
Focus on negative thoughts.
Yeah.
Because if you just go to the yard and back to your cell, nothing else on your mind but yard stuff.
Yeah.
This is all you're going to ever, this is as big as your world is going to be.
Yeah.
It's only how big your world going to be.
Yeah, right. And then if you got to memorize, there's a couple things going, like you want to do it right. Yeah. So you want to do God. So those guys are memorizing those lines.
Yes.
Like, I noticed that when in the scenes from A Few Good Men, it's like, they were on top of it. Yeah. Like, they knew all those lines because it's, what else are they going to do?
Right. But embody the role.
Right. God, it must be such a relief.
It is, because you get to express all the emotions that you really want to express.
Well, and that guy
who, you got permission to do it.
The guy in the doc who played Jessup.
Yeah.
He's working some big shit out, dude.
Yeah. That's my boy, Kenyatta. He's a great guy, too.
Yeah. I mean, he's like, you know, he's got, you know, he's owning his shit, and he's finding a way to be human yeah. in that shit and yeah. to understand his place.
Yeah.
And that is the reward, yeah. is knowing who you are, what you did, and, you know, what those consequences were, and finding a quality of life within yeah. that.
That's a fact.
You know, because I guess what happens when you do the acting is all of a sudden you start to look at yourself from a different perspective.
Yeah, you have to.
And that, you know, he's talking about, like, you know, either you got religion, but I'm not a religious guy, right. So you got to find some other thing. And then also he's struggling.
He found it in the core.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he's struggling with this idea that, like, I know I got this thing I do that's no good, but I can't just stop it. And I got to figure out how to stop it. That scene in the movie where that guy comes up behind your character.
Yeah.
You're like, what are you doing?
That's a real thing in prison, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Nobody keep walking. You don't let, I don't want nobody behind me. I see too many people get cut in the face from the back.
Yeah. And that was that. But that was like one of those moments where, you know, because all the guys who are prisoners, they know exactly what's going on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so you got to have at least a couple of them in there. They got to say, like, this is not real. And then you got to process that.
Yeah.
So that really happens.
Yeah, it really happens.
Oh, my God. And then once people start getting, well, it's interesting that you drew the idea that, like, a lot of the people that are drawn to the program are not the wolves.
Right,
and right. They're the guys that, you know, going to have a hard time anyways.
Right.
And they find some safety.
Yeah, but see what happens with those guys, they suppress a lot of the good in them that we need.
Yeah.
Because you try to make yourself invisible,
yeah.
not heard, not seen.
So that's why if you're not
you don't
a wolf,
want to attract no attention, really.
Right.
But they got a lot to offer these guys.
Sensitivity.
Yeah.
Yeah. And who's the other guy in the A Few Good Men in the documentary who no one even heard him talk before? That guy who was real quiet, and like he's going at it. He played the drill sergeant, I think.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. This was the first role that he ever had.
Yeah.
Man. And when he came and gave up that performance right there, because all through the jail, we never hear him. You never hear him talk, bro.
Yeah. So he must have been the rock star.
He was a rock star at that moment, man. You don't know how many officers wanted his autograph and all of that after that.
Because he was one of the invisible guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the plan now? What are you going to do? Are you getting offers and stuff?
Yeah, I got a few offers, man. I want to do a Western, man. Yeah, man. I want to do a Western, man. Bad. I need a duster, two guns, and horse riding.
That's what you want?
Yeah.
Is there any of that available?
I don't know. I mean, I got Mark looking at my manager, Mark, from MGMT.
Yeah.
We got a few scripts to look at.
So have you looked at any of them? Have you seen what they're trying to offer?
Well, actually, I haven't, because I'm more focused on promoting this movie right now.
Yeah,
than actually doing something else right at the moment.
Sure, so I haven't really. But it's exciting, right?
It's exciting to even be offered something.
Well, I think, like, what was it like? These guys who made this movie, it took some time, right? It
took like 7 years.
That's crazy.
7 years, but it took 19 days to film.
Yeah. What was the 7 years? What were they worried about?
Well, it was you had to run the money up, you know,
sure.
A lot of things like that. And then you got COVID in between,
right.
Those years right there, COVID.
But they knew they wanted to use guys from the inside who were on the.
Yeah, that was always on the table because they had a direct link with Brent Buell. So and
who's
Brent,
that?
Brent Buell is the guy who wrote Breaking the Mummy's Code.
Okay, yeah.
He's played by Paul Racy.
Yeah.
So they had a direct link with him, and he has a direct link with all of us.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, how can we get in touch with any of the guys? The first I thought it was that they just only wanted to hear our perspective so that they could write down and create a character somewhere.
Right.
At first I didn't know that they were even interested in using us.
Yeah.
But when it came out, it was a no-brainer for me. It was not a question. Yeah, let's go. I can't wait.
I know that guy. I can play that guy.
Yeah.
Well, that was what was really interesting to me was to see, like, because I was talking to Brendan about it, you know, like to see you and Domingo, you know, using whatever you learned, like using your acting skills is a whole different thing. You know, like, yours is like organic, and he's got to get into it, and you're like, I was in it.
I did this already.
But was that all your training was with that program? Basically,
I never thought about acting before anything like that, before the RTA program.
But you never took any classes or nothing after, like, you got out or, like, the polish
up? No.
You're just doing
but
it.
But during the time of RTA inside, I have a lot of volunteers that came through, like Joanna Chan. She has her own theater troupe in China.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, I learned from... Ah, man, Peter Barbiero.
Yeah.
He worked out in Westchester County at the theater. And there's a lot of theater people from Broadway that were involved in the training that came to the prison. A lot of volunteers.
So you were doing a lot of exercises and that
kind of
stuff?
Yeah, a lot of exercises. I had a lot of great advice on how to play roles.
Yeah.
And how to get into character.
Really?
Had a lot of great advice. I wouldn't say any formal training.
But that's all it is, though.
Yeah.
That is formal training.
Yeah.
Every actor, you know, like, and you know this, like, either you're instinctively going to do it.
Right.
If you've got it in you, you're going to do it, and you're going to be good at it, and you just maybe need a few tricks.
Yeah, I really learned how to listen more.
That's the whole thing,
listen
right?
More and pay attention to, because as I come into acting, I know that I don't have the broad picture in mind. I only have my role in mind.
Yeah.
But the director and the producers, these guys,
have the
vision of the whole thing.
Yeah. So they got to tell you. It's not all about you.
It's not about me. They don't have to tell me that. I know already. I know, but I want to do my part as best I can.
Yeah. But sometimes
so I gotta pay attention.
Yeah, and listen, and also know when it's, you know, you don't have to steal the scene.
Right.
All that shit.
Right.
So you're getting advice from all of these different, you know, professional people.
Yeah.
Coming in, telling you this or that, and you kind of integrate it.
It's just me paying attention now.
Yeah.
Me applying now.
Yeah.
Now that's all on me now.
Yeah. Well, you did great. It was great.
Thank
and
you.
I really appreciate you coming, man.
Yeah, man. I appreciate
you. Good to talk to you.
Great to meet you, man.
There you go. Good story, right? Sing Sing opens in theaters tomorrow, July 12th. The documentary Dramatic Escape can be streamed on Vimeo. Hang out for a minute, folks.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Hey, people, we posted another WTF rarity for Full Marin subscribers. It's a live show from 2010 we called The Night of Many Jews, featuring me, Susie Essman, Jeff Garland, Joe Mandy, and Gary Goldman.
You all right, buddy? Do we need to get you a special chair?
I should take this out.
Sure, go ahead. I'm not. Look at the size of this Jew. How often does that happen? And he's like attractive? Look at that. Him and I, we get this mixture between, you know, math Jew and composer Jew. And you're like sports Jew. You're like, what are you? Where the fuck did you come from?
It's like Gaston, the Jewish Gaston. I don't even fit in amongst the Jews.
But you have that, the quality of your head is Jewish.
Yeah, I'm a hook-nosed Jew, so...
Right,
yeah.
And the whole thing's Jewish. I've met a couple of tall Jews.
I'm 6'6", and ripped.
Do you play sports now?
I played football in college. I was really good in high school, but then I wasn't so good in college.
So you had to let it go? Did I start off wrong?
No, that's fine.
Are you upset about it still? Did you have dreams? Of being like the next Sandy Koufax of football.
You can't talk to a Jew about sports for 6 seconds without Sandy Koufax coming up. It's so... Sandy, we have like three go-tos. Houdini, Koufax, and Jonas Salk. And that's how we... See? You need us! Don't kill us! We have left-handed pitchers. They're not easy to find. And we cured polio, and we escaped things, and... My God, had I known Fonzie was Jewish growing up, I would have been so much happier. You need us!
We can hit things, and they'll turn on.
To get all the rare WTFs and other bonus episodes we post every week, sign up for the Full Marin. Just go to the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. And a reminder before we go, this podcast is hosted by Acast. Here's some guitar that I did a while ago.
Monkey and La Fonda, cat angels everywhere.